And welcome everyone to a brand new episode of the DKP here at WrestlingObserver.com and F4WOnline.com. I am once again your host, Alan, and I am here with a man who's never been on the show before, but we're like podcast second cousins in a way. We have all these mutual links in our friendship, and that is the guru of Lucha Libre, the man himself, the world famous, the Cubs fan. Cubs, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a big honor to make it to the big show finally.
Well, I don't know about all that, but one day we will maybe be considered the Paul White of podcasting. But until then, I will take whatever honors people bestow upon this show as maybe mildly decent or slightly hovering around average, something like that. I'll accept that.
I think you guys turned a couple of times during that trip to WWE to WrestleMania this year. I think you turned heel and face a couple of times at least.
There were some hard lefts involved. It was a journey. There was a few of those where I was just like, oh my god, what was that? Was like the I don't know if you listened to them, but I did two shows years and years ago. Have you come across Giant Tiger, the Canadian indie wrestler from Interspecies Wrestling?
I know of him, but I have not experienced his work.
Yeah, it's an experience, let me tell you. That's one word to describe it. But I had him on twice. First time, maybe a couple of years on, it might not like have aged that well, or being a few years more mature, it might not seem as funny as it was. But at the time, I thought, I will never do a funnier podcast than that. Had him on about 9 months to a year later, something like that, and it was the worst thing. You think some of the stuff on that road to WrestleMania were bad. That second Giant Tiger show was the biggest car crash I've ever been a part of. We have never been a part of an actual car crash, but knock on wood. But Cubs, that is enough dilly dallying around. We got to tell
there's a low bar here that I can. It'll be very tough for this to be the worst podcast. We've set that bar.
Oh, absolutely. And it's going to be especially hard because of the content which we'll be talking about. The motivation for this show. It's something that I have been following from the start, haven't missed a second of it, thanks to the man on the line with me, and it is something that I haven't really talked a lot about, in terms of, I haven't written anything really about it, the odd tweet here and there, I haven't done any podcast discussing it, because it's just something that I just found so fun, and I just kind of sit back, enjoy it, and it's an hour where I can just kind of not think about the consequences of this or that, or no need to super analyze. It's just really good entertainment. And Cubs, that's Lucha Underground. A joy which has come into my life in the past, I don't know, 6 months. And it's just a gift that's kept on giving. And I just wanted to do a show where we break down everything there is to talk about this incredible, awesome product, which I don't think I've seen something come along in wrestling in a long time be so universally loved by so many people. And for such a kind of out there product, it is its own thing. You would think it would have lovers and haters, detractors and fans, but it seems pretty much a consensus. People love Lucha Underground. And I suppose to you, I put the question, has it over-delivered what you were expecting? What were your thoughts? You probably had your ear to the ground very early in this process. And how has it all unfolded for you?
Yeah, I was paying attention to this when they had the first tapings. And when I saw what were those first couple episodes where I found out that we had an episode with Chavo Guerrero Jr. knocking out everyone with chairs and the show, I was like, I was very concerned because I thought AAA, after years, everyone knows the backstory that AAA had been talking about coming back to the U.S. for years and years, and they'd finally done it, and then they'd done it with Chavo Guerrero Jr. as the top heel. But once we started actually seeing the episodes, and once they got further and more people got on board as far as more Mexican guys, more AAA guys got involved, you really saw the potential of the show, and the matches and the week-to-week drama have just really delivered.
There was also the rumors, like, real shortly before it started airing, I think it was even after the tapings, that there wasn't going to be, like, actual like a huge amount of in-ring content in terms of full matches. There was people saying it was going to be like this reality show with these clips from matches, which is just action interspliced between whatever kind of stories they were shooting. And that was something that seemed just like a train wreck to me. And in hindsight, it's actually ironic because the sort of non-wrestling editing stuff they do, which is really kept to a perfect amount, I find, on these shows, is so well done. It's so good. Like, just for example, this past week's episode, they shot this stuff with Aerostar on the roof and Dario Cueto sneaking up behind him and just kind of saying all these, like, just sinister things to him. It's just so well shot, so well acted. It's really great, and it's such a nice compliment to the wrestling.
Yeah, it's nothing. It's a style production, and it's a level production that you don't see on any other wrestling show, WWE included. And it's something that you don't see on a lot of normal TV shows. In a lot of ways, this feels more comparable to an average sequential TV show than a wrestling show, because the backstage stuff doesn't overpower it, but it's such an important part of the whole overall aesthetic of the show that it would not be the same kind of wrestling show if it didn't have all those little 2-minute teasers or 2-minute vignettes with people backstage and it just being shot perfectly and everyone coming off like they're just stepped out of a movie set.
What did you think of the actual set itself and the aesthetics of it? It struck me at the start as being very like, Wrestling Society X. I forgot that. But Wrestling Society X, it kind of had that similar feel in terms of how it looked in the kind of like abandoned warehouse type thing, but all kind of glitzed up in terms of how they made it look, and it was dingy, but it was glamour dingy, if that makes sense. And the way they actually shoot the wrestling, the first match I saw was before I watched the first episode in full, I watched the Johnny Mundo Prince Puma match, which was put on YouTube in full, and I watched that, and I'll be honest, I didn't enjoy that match when I just watched it self-contained. I enjoyed it, but I wasn't over the top about it, and I didn't the way it was shot and the way everything kind of went from how the action kind of moved, it wasn't really sitting well with me. But it was once I watched the second episode in full, and then I went back and watched the first episode, then maybe it was probably when I was watching the third, I was like, wow, this is, I'm really starting to, it's just kind of settled with me, and I became a real big fan of the way it's produced. And because it is so different, it makes it so much fresher than a lot of the other products out there, which are just very pro wrestling, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not a person who watched a lot of the studio wrestling shows back in the day, but I've seen people compare Lucha Underground to that, and it kind of feels that way. It feels like, instead of a warehouse, it's like an empty factory floor where they clear the whole space and put down the ring. You have the foreman's area up top where people kind of near the balcony where everyone stages. You have the manager's office where Dario sits. And then, it still has that factory dust. It feels a little dirty, but it also feels like the wrestling is the center part of the place. And it's, you get to see the fans react, but you get to see the wrestlers use the whole building, the whole set, just as a whole playground to pull off different stuff.
That's been one of my favorite things about it. I don't know if you can hear that, Cubs, but there's a fox going absolutely mental outside my window. I'm going to have to close my window in a sec, so apologies if anyone hears that. The way they've used it in terms of, especially with Johnny Mundo, who we'll get into various performers in detail in a little bit, but the way he's been able to use the set for his parkour stuff that he can do, it's so, so innovative, and they've really made the most out of it. I just love like the way the entrance is set up, but the way the guys come down the stairs through the crowd. I think that has a really cool look about it compared to just your usual standard walk down the ramp pro wrestling entrance or walk down the aisle pro wrestling entrance. I think, yeah, there's a lot of cool little things they do, and it's it's if you think about like setting up a pro wrestling show or a pro wrestling product, you okay, so I want to make it different to usual. It's like, on the whole, in one big swoop, it's kind of hard to think about, oh, one thing you can do to make it completely different. But if you do all these little things, they kind of come together to make it have that overall fresh feel. And Lucha Underground does all the little things, just like that, the entrance alone. Let's talk about some of the performers that have kind of come along and that have been used and done so well in this promotion. And let's start with the guy I just mentioned, Johnny Mundo, because he's a guy who left WWE, I want to say maybe 3 years ago, maybe a little longer, had a world of potential there, but never quite realized it. Seemed to be really out of wrestling. I don't think anyone was really clamoring to see him be a focal point in a promotion in 2015. But I mean, he's still a young guy. He's still in amazing shape, obviously. For him to come in, I think a lot of people had question marks. Probably they were less worried about him than the likes of Chavo, who we mentioned earlier. But he was definitely a question mark. And he has done really well. And I think he's important as kind of the name guy on there that people would recognize if they were just flicking channels.
Yeah, he's a guy who WWE fans recognize as a guy who got to at least a certain level and a guy who had a lot of good matches. And he could have he's the one guy in the group who went to WWE, who's from WWE, but actually succeeded in WWE. He's not like Chavo or Big Rick, who were there but didn't do much or didn't go too far. And he's not like the AAA guys who the U.S. fans really don't know that well. And he's not... He's the guy they needed to be opposite Ricochet, at least to start. Or Prince Puma, I'm sorry. I don't know who Ricochet is. Prince Puma, because then you have a guy that the fans actually believe in who might be pretty good, but just never came to the top. And then they turn Mundo's inability to go all the way in WWE into a good story for him in Lucha Underground. He's a guy who just who could be at the top, but just needs to get that one more win to get the championship. And he's a realistic guy who you could believe to get the championship. And even knowing that he's going to be a top guy, he could have just kind of rusted on his reputation. But he's pretty much, I feel like he's had his best year ever in Lucha Underground for the tapings.
He's working so hard. Like, he's doing things that, it was an early enough episode. It was one of the times where, The crew and Big Rick were beating down Prince Puma, probably was.
Yes.
And Johnny Mundo comes to make the save. He doesn't run into the ring. He doesn't jump over the ropes into the ring. He jumps from, I guess it was probably the top of Dario Cueto's office, but it was this insane running jump from an incredible height where he just lands in the ring and does a lucha roll as he lands. I don't think... Like, obviously, someone who does parkour probably doesn't seem too out of the ordinary, but it's just something like, I've never seen anyone jump and roll from that kind of a height on a pro wrestling show before. It was absolutely crazy, and to take a risk like that, and even if it is extra controlled for a guy like him with his background, still, it's mighty impressive. And just in his matches themselves, like, he's had some wars where he's done some crazy things and let crazy things been done to him. And I wouldn't have expected him to put his body on the line so much for any product really in 2015. And credit to him, man. He does it really well, and it doesn't seem like he gets hurt. So good for Johnny Mundo. What's been your favorite Johnny Mundo match so far in the Lucha Underground run?
I think it was the three-way ladder match he had with Big Rick and Prince Puma, but there's been some good ones. I mean, the thing with Mundo is he's had the big matches with Puma and Big Rick, and he was a big part of the Aztec Warfare. But then he's also had what could have been just one-side matches, but turned out to be really big showcases against Son of Havoc, against Angelico, where
the Angelico match is crazy.
Some veterans might have just taken most of the match, but he made those guys look like stars even when they lost. And it was great effort on his part just to do his stuff, but he was also helping other people along the way. You can tell he believes in this whole project, and I think that's what you can tell with everyone on the show, is that they're completely believing in what Lucha Underground has to offer, and they're 100% committed, and it shows with their work.
Yeah, I was at the WrestleCon show in San Jose, and he had a match with ACH on that, and he came out wearing his Lucha Underground t-shirt, and the he was introduced as John Morrison, and the crowd were chanting Johnny Mundo, and he was so happy, and he was like cheerleading the crowd when they were chanting Lucha at him and all this. He was, yeah, you can tell he, as you said, is a big believer in the product. Another thing he did, which I'll use this as a transition into our next subject, he had some great matches, including what I think might be my favorite match he's had to date in Lucha Underground, a cage match against King Cuerno. And yeah. King Cuerno is a guy who, so he's El Hijo del Fantasma, I believe, in AAA. And the first couple of times I saw him come out here in Lucha Underground, I was like, okay, he's a big guy, great body, but I'm not sure if he's like the super worker that some of these other luchadors might be. He seems like he could be just more of a guy with a really good look who gets a push because of that. How wrong I was. This guy has just taken this character that he's been given, which at the start just kind of seemed that could be a token kind of one-note character, but he has everything about him is influenced by his character of being this hunter, this just bitter sniper hunter that it will avenge any wrong done to him, and he'll, if you get one over on him, he will not stop until he gets back on you. And yeah, I love the whole look, the way he carries himself, and the way he's performed in his matches, really taking the intensity up a notch, especially that feud with Johnny Mundo, which I thought was really great. And he had another one with, was it Drago, was his first real big feud in Lucha Underground?
Yeah, that was right. The one where he won when the one where they had that match where Drago splashed him off the top of the thing through a table.
Was it the next week then they came back and then he beat Drago in like a, it was like a last man standing or something where he like tied him up by, he did something involving tying him up, I remember.
He tied them down in the corner so he couldn't get up by the count.
Then he beat the shit out of him.
But that cage match was so great because they took away his biggest move, that taupe, but he still found different ways to do different stuff, and they used the cage so much in that match that really felt like it was an important stipulation. I really like that. I really like all his work. I've been a big fan of Fantasma since he was in CMLL, where I was constantly pushing. I was bugging people that he should be used bigger, or he should be using the, or he's the guy WWE should have been looking at all that time. So I was happy for him when he made the move to AAA, and I'm even happier for him when he's done so well in Lucha Underground. But he's really had to completely reinvent himself, because the Hijo del Fantasma character and the King Cuerno character are just completely different things, and he's had to develop this Hunter character from scratch while on TV, and he's done such a good job of it in a short time. It's just really impressive. I think of all the luchadors, he's the one who had to make the biggest adjustment. A guy like Phoenix is still in AAA, is the same guy in Lucha Underground, but he's had to, that stalking mentality, he's got to slow down a little bit from what he does in AAA, and he's pulled it all off so well. It's very impressive to see.
You mentioned his one move that he's most known for, and it's like the first time we saw this tope, we're like, whoa, what a tope. Crazy. That was awesome. One of the best topes you'll ever see. But it was kind of like, okay, so he just did a really good tope on this night in this match. And then the next week he does another one. And it's like, wow, that was another really great tope. This guy has an awesome tope. And then it was like, so often in wrestling, like, you, the fans, will notice something, and like the promotion just won't get behind it, and it will just be something the fans talk about. But the promotion were right at the forefront here, and this has been one of the things with Lucha Underground. There is nothing the fans notice and the fans think are cool that the promotion doesn't pick up on and push even before the fans get a hold of it. And they were right on board with this move, creating these crazy videos of him doing this tope in slow motion and shooting it from all these crazy angles. Just so awesome. And he was clearly building it up to be a bigger and bigger deal as he starts adding this taunt before it, where he starts kind of like he's mimicking shooting a bow and arrow, which ties back to the Hunter deal. It's just all such a great package. And yeah, I think I voted the Rainmaker the move of the year in the Observer Awards for a few years running now, just because it's so over and it's just such a big move in Okada's matches, and it looks cool too. But I'm gonna have a hard time not voting for King Cuernos. I think he might call it his arrow now or something like that. Does he have a cute name for it, or is it just tope?
I think it's like the arrow from hell. It might be something
the arrow
like that.
From hell. That is it. Yeah. I remember they said that. Yeah. Arrow from hell. I'm voting. Yeah. Just now that you've said the name, that cemented it for me. It's Arrow from Hell. Observer Award Move of the Year 2015.
Yeah, it's so great. Every time he does it, he's done it great. I mean, I liked how with last week's show where he was about to do it and Puma and Mundo had to pull him out before he destroyed whoever he was going to run into. It's a big deal.
Exactly. So. And you get the feeling that they do kind of like not do it every match. When he does do it, it's the crowd are going to go nuts for it because they've put it over huge now. But let's talk about the champion. We can't go much longer without bringing him up, Prince Puma. For me, you mentioned his likeness. I think it's just a similar tattoo choices, but him and Ricochet, two similar wrestlers, and Prince Puma, the masked version. There is definitely something lacking in terms of the charisma, but the look of Prince Puma, and now especially where he's kind of stepping on King Cuerno's gimmick a bit here, but I won't complain because it looks so cool, where he's coming out with the giant bear on him, the bear skin. The whole look is really awesome, and the Aztec warrior, the ancient Aztec warrior deal is cool. Conan doing the talking for him can be a little clunky at times, but I like the way they're building it, and I like the dynamic, and Conan is such a good performer in speaking in particular that he carries his end well. In the ring, as far as going blow for blow, Puma is so phenomenally, so crisp. Everything he does looks so good. How do you feel he's carried the belt, and how do you feel he's done as the ace of the promotion? Would he still, in seeing how he's done, would he still have been the guy you'd have gone with, or do you think someone else would have done a better job?
I think he has to be the pick. I mean, there's the problem where they have to dance around that he can't speak the Spanish that they're kind of billing him as speaking, although one point I'm sure Puma will speak and everyone will go crazy because finally Prince Puma has said something. But I think everything else...
I know, can he? He's got a pretty thick Kentucky accent.
Yeah, well, you know, he'll speak, but maybe someone else's voice will come out. Well, they'll have to... They're good at that.
Awesome.
They'll have to find something. But I think his in-ring has been so great, and he just looked like another level athlete in all his matches, with the springboard shooting star press that he did, or was it springboard? The shooting star press he did against Cage in one of those matches.
The one where he climbs the ropes and does the outside.
And then he did like a 450 through a table, I think. I mean, he's done some crazy maneuvers that just looks like, especially if you want your promotion to look different than other stuff on TV, you want to have Puma as champion because he can just do stuff that almost no one can do, and especially no one's doing on a regular basis like he's doing. He's had stellar matches every time. He's, even though he can't talk, he's done enough with his body language, especially in the recent segments with Conan and Hernandez, that you can kind of get the idea of what he's thinking, even if he can't express it out loud. So I don't think, and he feels, because he's Prince Puma and not Ricochet, he feels like something that's of Lucha Underground. He's a specific character to them. That I think that no one else would quite work as well as he does as champion.
What's been, you mentioned the ladder match as your favorite Johnny Mundo match, and he was involved in that. Would that be your favorite Prince Puma match, or is there another one that really stands out?
It's tough to serve.
I really like the Phoenix one, I gotta say.
I like that one too. I like both of the big cage matches. There's three cage matches, actually. I've liked all the matches with Cage. I liked that first Mundo week was good too. I mean, I think the only one that hasn't quite worked out was that Cuerno one a couple weeks ago, but it looked like that's because Cuerno got knocked silly in that match.
I was going to ask you the Cuerno, because it might have been talked about in one of like the Dave segments with Ryan where they review Lucha Underground on a Wednesday, but I always skip that because I usually don't watch it for a couple days until the Spanish version airs. So it's, it might have been talked about, but when I saw it, that was what I thought. It looked like Cuerno got knocked loopy.
That taping was one of the ones I got to see, and they took him out of the ring right away after that match. So something, I don't know if it was a head injury or something else, but something was off during that match. And so I think both guys are really good and have been good in all their other matches. So I hope they get another chance to go against each other.
Yeah, me too. The Phoenix match was around, January, I think. And, they totally killed it. Let's talk a little about Phoenix and some of the other, this will seem terrible of me grouping these guys together, but I kind of want to talk about them as a pool because they came in together. Let's focus more on the babyface guys for now, because there's someone on the heel side that I want to separate and maybe save for later in the show, the true star of Lucha Underground. I'm sure everyone knows what I'm talking about already. But we got Phoenix, Drago, Aerostar, throw in Superfly there as well. Anyone else that you think would kind of fit in that grouping? Those seem to be the main guys, right?
Yeah, those are the main ones. I mean,
guy. What's the dude who Arjenis?
Arjenis
on too much, but
no, yeah, but he did have that. He had one really good match, so he's been around.
Yeah, he did. So of those guys, who's been the standout for you? Who's been the most surprising? And how do you feel they've done as a whole in terms of coming in and representing themselves? Just before you answer, I'll say the one thing that's really stood out to me, like pretty much with all these guys right away, is their look. They all look like $1 million, and they all look like the modern version of what a luchador is. Or the next level version of what a luchador is. And that you kind of had your, like, I don't know, go back 20 years, your luchadors wearing the mask, and then they'd have the real plain trunks with just kind of high-waisted trunks that kind of lucha look. And then maybe 10 years ago, you had a lucha look, which would be more like sort of plain mask, cooler designs maybe on the trunks. And now you got these guys coming out with these crazy masks or these crazy outfits like Aerostar has. It's kind of like it's evolved again. And these guys, for me, the first thing that stood out was just their presentation. They all, as I said, looked like $1 million.
Yeah, Drago in particular, the moment he entered and walked down the ring the first time, that look with that mask and the tongue and everything completely got him over. I think it's been really great in distinguishing them and getting them over. I think we've seen with luchadors and other promotions that sometimes when you bring them in as bunches, it becomes hard for the fans to tell them apart besides what moves they do. But everyone they brought in has their own signature look. And they all feel different from each other. I think Drago is close to the top, but I think Phoenix of the guys who have come of that group of technicals have come in has probably done the best. He had the great match versus Prince Puma. He had the great feud with Mil Muertes, which probably maybe the match of the promotion so far. He's the crowd has adapted to him quickly. They've adopted him. For they believe in his moves, and he's done some crazy stunts on the show. I think Drago and Aerostar did better than I thought they were going to be. Aerostar had the great first impression in the four-way match with Cage and Argenis and Angelico, but I was worried that he was going to be lost in the mix a little bit. But I think he's opened eyes with that best of five series, and that was really that best of five was really great for those for Drago and Aerostar to give them some match a set of matches to focus on them and let people get to know them. But I think that's one of the bigger stories of the whole show is that everybody on the show has pretty much had their moment to shine and had their own storylines.
Yes. I wanted to get to that. That has been, for me, the best thing about this show. Like you said, everyone from, I would say from the top of the card to the bottom of the card has their own thing. But I don't think that's, because they've done it so well in terms of giving everyone something meaningful and showcasing it, it doesn't feel like there is a bottom of the card. And so often you'd hear the talking point of, oh, you can't have everyone equal or everyone's just the mid-card. That sounds good in general. But I think Lucha Underground has proven that you can focus on everyone and can push everyone in a different way and have everyone be over. It's really, both from the reaction of people online and the reaction of the crowd there at the tapings, which has gotten noticeably, these crowds at the tapings are getting noticeably more into the product and reacting to specific things way more now than they were at the start. And I think that's a testament to just how well all these individual stories, whether giving, like, okay, so it's like Drago loses a feud, Aerostar it comes in, doesn't really have anything, and it's like, hey, we're going to put these in a best five series and really showcase them. And all of a sudden, the crowd are really into both these guys. Several other people, some of whom we'll get to in a little bit, just people you think, okay, they're going to be the jobber of the show, and all of a sudden they have this cool, awesome storyline that everyone's into. It's really great.
Yeah, I mean, everyone feels special. Everyone feels there's sometimes when I watch Raw, I'll see a couple of people and I know that they will have a good match, but I've been conditioned to understand that these aren't people I should invest my time in. I think I had a problem with the John Cena Stardust match a couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week, where I knew that was probably going to be a good match, but I knew it was Stardust, so it didn't really matter. There isn't that problem with Lucha Underground. Everyone is capable of going all the way to the top, and everyone's capable of having an important moment of their own that won't be cut off sometime down the road. I think they've really built a trust with the fans by following through on their storylines and giving you a beginning, a middle, and end to everything so that you can invest in the stories and feel like they won't forget about them a few weeks later. And I think they've done a good job of spreading out those stories so that everyone who's a regular has something to do or something going on, or even if it doesn't look like they have something going on, maybe what just happened here will come down to mean something 5 weeks later, like we saw with the Aztec Rumble, where a whole bunch of smaller stuff that had been building up all came through that match, and a whole bunch of smaller stuff that happened in that match came out of it and went into the next few weeks of TV.
Yeah, it's the way they book it, the way they pace things out, the way they make use of their time, because you're talking about, I don't know, 50 minutes per show, and in that 50 minutes, they might give some guys the focus on week, whatever, 18, but they'll include something, even if it's just a real quick video package or whatever, with someone who's not in a main thing that week, just to keep them fresh and keep their story fresh in your mind. And then next week, they might have more of a focus on them. So, yeah, they map it out really well. I'm not sure how many hours a week the people who are involved in the creative production of this or the creative side of things in this spend on it, but it would appear to me they give it a lot of thought and they really map this thing out. It's like kind of when Dave loves to talk about the G1 in New Japan, how Ghetto and Jado, it's such a finely detailed mapped out thing that they must take so long for them to put together. And Lucha Underground kind of has that feel to me. It's really the detail in putting it together and mapping it out. It's really well organized, and it never feels like a thrown together kind of, like, so often you can watch WWE or TNA and even ROH on occasion, and it can seem like a kind of thrown together thing, which not much thought has been put into. maybe a bit harsh to include ROH under that umbrella, but WWE and TNA certainly. And with Lucha Underground, it always feels, everything you see, it feels like there's been a lot of thought put into it.
It reminds me, go ahead. Justin Shapiro likes to bring up Chris Kresge, who was a former WWE writer in the early 2000s, who used to storyboard different storylines, and that's when they had their best narrative flow for WWE. And Lucha Underground reminds me of the same thing. There's clearly someone's gone ahead and figured out this is how the storyline is going to work, and sort of map it out to different episodes, and maybe things get altered a little bit. But you get the feeling that when they've started something, they've planned it out all the way to the end, and it makes a big difference in how it comes across on TV.
And they have been lucky as well, because to my knowledge, there hasn't been many hiccups, has there, with regard to injuries or guys being pulled or guys leaving. It's all, to your knowledge, has there been much kind of spanners in the works, if any?
There's in the last set of tapings, people who read my site know that I do post the spoilers, so I know what's going on ahead of time, and I'm not going to give away any here. So
funny story. I don't read the spoilers, as I mentioned, when Dave and Brian talk about even just the show. When I haven't seen it, I try to skip that, but I certainly don't like to hear the taping stuff, which is so far in advance. And the other day, it was the most awkward situation. We're moving office in work, and I was helping with like loads of boxes and stuff like that, and I was just doing my stint of that kind of stuff, and I had my headphones in because just kind of doing that kind of work, and throwing the headphones in. So listening to Dave and Brian, had my hands full with stuff, and I was like in the middle of like holding a door open, and I was like, I literally couldn't stop what was going on in my ears, and Dave just went through like 45 seconds of spoiling like every major thing that happens in Lucha Underground in the next like 3 months, all the way up till July. And I was like, no, I just couldn't take my headphones out. I couldn't drop the boxes. I was just looking for any way to not be listening to what I was listening to, and it ruined it all for me, goddammit. I've tried to forget about them immediately after he said them, but one thing certainly stuck with me as particularly amazing. It was kind of like everything I heard, I was like, no, stop talking. But I was also like, yes, that sounds awesome. So it was, yeah, bittersweet.
That's the one big difference from the show. I think that's why it's helped them do the stories better, is that they've taped so far in advance, and they've taped so many blocks of TV together that they don't have the week in between each taping to change their mind. They have to just go from one show, the two show, the three show, the four show, and have that month done at a time. So the problem is that if you look in the wrong places or listen to the wrong podcast where certain people just blurt out next week's result while talking about last week's, it become a little bit of a pain. But I think for most people who aren't doing that, it makes the overall presentation so much better.
Just one quick question I had that I meant to get to when we were talking about the Technico Luchadors. What kind of age are we dealing with for Phoenix Aerostar Drago? Also early 20s?
Phoenix is early 20s. Drago is, I think, early 40s or just around 40, because he's been
early
around
for 40s?
Really? He's like maybe 40, 41. So it's the greatest time on your biggest run. Aerostar, we were under the impression that he was early 30s, but I was told in the last month that he's actually late 30s. So these are not young guys. These guys have a lot of miles on them, and they're still being able to do these matches.
That's crazy. I thought these guys just came about in the last couple of years, and they were like, just, I assume they were your typical luchador that starts like in their late teens, so they were probably still early 20s. That's nuts.
Yeah. It's crazy. But I mean, I'm very happy for those guys, because those guys have been guys who've been mid-card guys or been lower in that in AAA for years. And then finally they get to their big stars, a whole new audience at a point where they probably weren't expecting it to be that.
Okay. You did tell me about this. I'm looking up Drago's Wikipedia, and it's got his ring names.
Yes.
And
this is great.
Got Elgato, well, it might not be great for what you're thinking, because you got things stand out like Gato Everready, Jimmy Boy.
Yes.
But the one that stands out to me, Cubs, I need an explanation, is Alan.
Alan. He was part of the Barrio Bars. It was Alan, Dennis, and Billy Boy. And they were skateboarding teenagers for when they were in their mid-20s. So he was Alan for many years. They had a billion batches Oz and Scoria. He was also Billy Jean, which was a Elvis impersonator. Not an Elvis, a Michael Jackson impersonator. He started out as that.
Good Lord, was he masked in all these gimmicks?
No. Well, Gato Everready he was. He was Gato Everready was a cat who was the Everready Bear Company had a cat as a sponsor, so he was the wrestling equivalent of the cat for a few years.
Oh my God, I need you to send a picture of Gato Everready and his. Yeah. When I search Alan, I seem to just be getting pictures of Alan Stone, who is
a different Alan altogether.
Yeah, different Alan altogether. That's nuts that those guys are so much more experienced than I thought. Was Aerostar always Aerostar, or was he a different luchador before that?
He was Aerostar for about a decade, but before that, we're not sure exactly who he was. We were under the impression that he was a soccer-playing goat, but he denies that he was a soccer-playing goat, so it's very confusing.
Help me here. I remember the soccer-playing goats, Los Chivas, were... I remember them being like a trios team in Chikara, and then Andrew Everett, he was the Chiva kid, and was he... working with the Los Chivas in some capacity, or like was he in the Chikara team with them, or was that just a completely separate deal entirely?
I think it was a completely separate deal. I think it was Chivas, people doing the Chivas gimmick in the Mid-Atlantic region who borrowed the idea from the AAA ones, but they weren't related in any way. I know it was very weird when that was going on. So I was like, why would they get the idea to play Chivas? But I think Everett got the idea from them, so he hasn't related to AAA except for the match they had at the WrestleCon where he had the triple where he wrestled Aerostar and Jack Evans, and hopefully that impressed some people. But he'd be a good guy to see in Lucha Underground. There's a big list of guys I would like to see on a season two, and I think Everett would be one of those guys.
I think Jack looked awesome. I've been a Jack Evans fan since he first kind of broke out, and he was a guy on my bucket list to see live, and I never thought I would, so that was such a cool bonus. But then it was even better because he was just awesome in the match. He was really, really good. I would say even he was the best guy in the match, so I hope he bursts onto the scene at some point in Lucha Underground, because he'll obviously be a great fit there. But should we move on to our No, we'll hold on. We'll hold on a little bit before we get to the main event player here for a minute. I want to talk about a storyline that I currently love in Lucha Underground. That is the love triangle, or the hate triangle, if you will, between Son of Havoc, Ivelisse, and, as Dave Meltzer likes to call him, Luke Rockhold's little brother, Angelico. And I just want to say, first off, Angelico, I don't know if it's his natural personality or if he's just playing a character, but he is the greatest oblivious, obnoxious dummy I've ever seen on anything ever. He plays that so brilliantly. It's just fantastic. I love how just completely unaware he is to everything that's going on around him, and just kind of, yeah, just playing a bit of an airhead, but at the same time, super cool and an awesome, talented wrestler. And Ivelisse and Son of Havoc, who, when I referenced earlier, someone you just think is kind of going to be a jobber and then is given this awesome story and it gets over huge, that is Son of Havoc, because he's one of the more over baby faces on the show right now.
Yeah, that live crowd has completely adopted him. Plus, I think his character is this so over the top with the giant beard that he has now, with the big deep voice that he has in his promos, and then he does crazy moves in his matches. I mean, for a biker, he must have lived a very strange and twisted life where he was like a gymnast in his bed, and then he turned evil and just turned his back on the pommel horse or something and decided to just ride the open road. But before I do any more some half fan fiction, he just had some great matches too. I mean, the Mundo match was really good. Even when he's not the featured player, when he was losing, he was losing in such comedic ways to Pimpinella and Masquerita that I think it really endeared him to that crowd.
Yeah, and Ivelisse as like the mouthy woman in the whole thing, she is perfect in her role. And she's done well in the ring holding her own against a lot of these guys. And some of the matches she's had with Angelico had some moments that were a bit clunky, but overall, I think it's been very good. And their trios match was a lot of fun, where they qualified for, I guess, the three-way trios title final. I've loved all the matches in the trios tournament so far. Their story in that is really good. And it's a nice little mix. Angelico's got an interesting background. Maybe tell the listeners a little about him.
Angelico's originally from South Africa, but he's been around the world a couple of times. He ended up in Mexico and trained under Ultimo Dragon in the Toriumon gym there. He lived at the IWRG arena for a few years. He wrestled there for a few years. He went back to Japan for a while. He's been back in Mexico for about 2 years, I think now. And his team with him and Jack Evans, I think have raised both of them to just a really high level. You've seen it with Angelico in this on Lucha Underground. He looks good, but he has exciting matches now, and he's more confident in what he can do, and he's not doing stuff he came to anymore. And he looks the part of a tall kind of dopey guy, but he's actually, the one time I had a 2 minute conversation with him, he's a smart guy who's thankful for the all the people he's run into. He's trained with Ultimo Dragon. He's trained with Negro Navarro. I don't know who he trained with Japan, but I'm sure he trained with someone crazy there too. He's just a weird melting pot of a whole bunch of different wrestling styles from a person who's not from any of those places.
Yeah, he's got to be up there with like the most diverse backgrounds. He is the definition of a mutt in terms of wrestling backgrounds. It's crazy. He's, I don't know, just in terms of world traveling, he's done more than what most adventurers would do, and to throw in like wrestling and all these places as well. It's impressive, quite frankly. And he's definitely a different kind of performer, and in terms of what he can do in the ring. And I'm looking forward to see him grow, and he is still quite young, so I'm sure he's got a great future ahead of him, and I hope he does great things here in Lucha Underground. But let's move on to the man I'm itching to talk about, the man everyone's itching for us to talk about, Cubs fan, Pentagon Jr., the man. He is the greatest man in the world. He is the biggest dickhead in the world, but he's so cool, you can't help but love him, even though he does reprehensible things. This guy, I'll be honest, he came out of nowhere for me. I think I had seen one or two matches he had, probably about a year or so ago. I remember specifically Joe Gagne recommending a match he was involved in. For whatever reason, and I guess he did dabble in this a little bit, I had him in my mind as a guy who was doing like a lot of deathmatch stuff. I don't know if that was fully the case, but that's what I had in my mind. I have a hard enough time getting into Lucha to begin with, so adding in the idea of death matches, which I'm definitely not a big fan of, really didn't exactly make it seem like he was going to be my cup of tea. How wrong I was, because upon his really his first appearance in Lucha Underground, I mean, he stole the show for me in that three-way where him, Aerostar, and Phoenix debuted. And I kind of, again, made that mistake of thinking, oh, okay, he's going to be the kind of the heel undercard guy that puts over people. Very quickly, he was sort of not pulled from in-ring because he'd still have matches, but they started focusing more on him from a video package and kind of telling his story of who he was and what his character was. These amazing videos, just the coolest things you've ever seen. And then they brought him back with doing this gimmick of just breaking everyone's arm and being very proud of his actions in doing so. And he's becoming the biggest star in Lucha Underground for me. And I think everyone is on board with this guy just being a great performer in terms of charisma, how he carries himself, everything. And the crazy thing is, everyone's gotten so on board with him in the last few weeks, and he hasn't even had a proper match yet. He had the trios tag, but he barely worked in it. He was leaving other people do the work and doing character stuff. So when he starts having, because we saw in the early matches just how good he is, I think when he starts having extra long matches and stuff, it's gonna take him to an even another level. So that's my soliloquy over with Cubs. Tell us all about Pentagon Jr.
Yeah, you can't see this because this is a podcast and it's audio, but I'm doing the zero little hand signal right now. You mentioned his death match, and he had one just brutal match with an Indian luchador named Aries last year, where he took a bottle, broke the bottle, and used the bottle on the poor fellow's forehead. And he's not doing that in Lucha Underground, although I think it's funny that maybe people who found him in Lucha Underground Google him and run into that match because it's so crazy. But he's got that attitude of the killer guy who will stab you with a bottle. And he has that attitude the whole time. It's just a scary personality. They just grabs your attention. And then he takes that personality, but he's also just really good at working with all the different kind of guys they have in the Lucha Underground. He was so important in that first triangle match with him and Drago and Phoenix, keeping that together and making those huge spots that made match memorable come off well. And he was just he wasn't enhancement talent, but he was a guy helping get Phoenix over early, helping with the Sexy Star feud early. But he's really come to on his own since they did that vignette where he went to Japan, where they show his background of going to Japan and learning how to break everyone's ligament and everyone's bone. That thing was so awesome that, you know, I mean, you should create a special category for it and just give him all the awards just for the time where he had the guy in the armbar and broke the arm and the candlelight went out. So just so over the top great. You're exactly right. He hasn't had like a 4-minute match in probably like 3 months, but he's just bringing the attitude, bringing the personality, and bringing the serial killer instincts to each match. We're just breaking everybody's arm and you never know when he's coming or when he's going to do it again.
And then deciding to randomly throw in a socket gesture last week, yes. Which I just, the guy has, in terms of being like every kind of a heel, he has it all. He's doing it all. He's being a monster heel, a sinister heel, a cowardly heel, an arrogant heel, a DX kind of socket heel, or a Young Bucks socket heel. He's doing everything, and it's a wonder to watch.
He's always had the in-ring going back to when he started in AAA's Dark Dragon, but really over like the last 18 months in AAA, you can see that his confidence has just kept on rising. And I think his success in Lucha Underground has fed on his success in AAA. It's been building and building him up. They've really started to unleash him in AAA. I think his promos in Lucha Underground have proven to them that they can do more promos in AAA and then vice versa. He's really the guy that when they need to have a good match with Mysticist or Rey Mysterio in AAA, that's the guy that they're calling on all the time. And he's delivering every time. And you can see he believes in himself completely. I think the sky's the limit for him. It's been that way for a long time, but I think that everyone sees it in him now. And I think regardless of how any feud goes, I think he's always going to be a guy who's just going to be like, if one match away from challenge for a championship, if they like even hinted between Pentagon and Prince Puma as a match, everyone would just be dying to see that match whenever it happens.
Oh, I cannot wait to see that match, and I hope that happens soon. I hope that happens like 9 months down the line, and it'll be. Yeah. It just has to happen at some point. But on the AAA side of things, he is still in his 20s, right?
Yes, he and Phoenix are brothers. He's the slightly older brother, but they're both.
They're brothers. Oh wow.
Yeah, they got into AAA because they were wrestling at indies, and they and their cousins would do the same trios match week after week after week. And then they did it for the AAA audience, and they got over big and got them both signed. And they worked
against their cousins. Are they good too?
No, the cousin, one of them just started with AAA, but the other guys just kind of have been around the indies and are good, but just not their level. But it's interesting to see because one, if you're a fan of AAA and fan of Lucha Underground, one of the interesting things have been to see is that they've managed to do different feuds between the same group of people on both shows. They haven't reviewed the Phoenix and Pentagon stuff much on Lucha Underground except for that first couple episodes. You've got Phoenix versus Mil Muertes, while in AAA you got to see Phoenix versus Phantasma. So it's the same general group of guys, but they've made different combinations out of it, and I think it's made both products stronger.
So do you think, obviously with the really unfortunate, sad passing of Perro Aguayo Jr., I guess Pentagon Jr. was almost like a protege in a way. It was kind of like he was the upcoming guy in Perros del Mal, I believe. Would that be right in saying that?
Yeah, he was, Perros del Mal had run out of members for different reasons, and when they wanted to reload that stable, the first thing they did is add Pentagon Jr. to it. So I think they had high hopes for
him. Do you think he's going to really have the rocket strapped to him extra fast now to fill the hole that's left, which obviously will be an impossible hole to fill, but with Perro gone, do you think they're going to really be giving him a lot of the opportunities that the Perro would have had in the coming year or so?
I think because he works so well with Ray and with Mysticus, he's the guy it makes the most sense to do that with. I think it's still because they haven't had much time to all be together and move forward with their TV. It's tough to tell what they're actually going to do. But if they had to pick someone, Pentagon would be my pick.
Yeah, it's be a tough thing for him to carry, but he seems like type of guy with confidence now that he could forge on and try and see it as something where he has to take the ball from his mentor and do him justice, and I'm sure if he did he would do an amazing job of it. I'd say he's more than capable. Go ahead.
It's a big role reversal for Pentagon too, because he was like he started out as Dark Dragon and he was just a guy that was working the first couple matches while Phoenix started moving up the card, and then AAA decided that they wanted to create a new generation of Octagon and found the guy and gave him the gimmick, and they wanted to make sure that the new Octagon looked good, so they needed to make a new version of Octagon's longtime rival Pentagon, and that's the only reason Pentagon Jr. existed. Is so Octagon Jr. could have a rival. Only Octagon Jr. lasted two matches and signed a deal with NXT, and now everyone knows him as Kalisto. So if it wasn't for
Kalisto, was Octagon Jr.
So if it wasn't for Kalisto, I think Pentagon Jr. is so talented he would have got there at some point, but he might have not got there as Pentagon Jr. He might have not got there so quick, and he's taken the most of that opportunity to really become a big deal.
Now, if I know you wrote something towards the end of the year about how he was your luchador of the year, yeah. And you recommended some matches and that, but if you were to recommend one match to the listeners, and maybe even plug that article, what would the match be?
Okay. You know, the most recent great Pentagon Jr. match I've seen was the Rey the Reyes main event with him and Mysticus versus... him and Perro versus Rey Mysterio and Mysticus, but that's I rewatched that the other day, and it's tough to watch considering the situation. Let me think of what. And then that Aries match we were talking about before was good for completely different reasons, just because it was just the crazy intensity of the whole thing. You think, what do I have that was good from Pentagon Jr.? Pentagon became tag champion and became and was already mixed tag champion in AAA, but both those matches were kind of just, they were good, but they were not on the level. There was a trios match earlier in the year that I thought was really great with him. With it was from February 9th last year. It was him, Chessman, and Daga versus Angelico, Jack Evans, and Australian Suicide that I really liked from last year with him. And he has a lot of, he had a lot of matches that were just consistently good. Because the AAA format is so, the TV format is so trios and tag heavy, he hasn't had the standout singles matches that he's had elsewhere. But I think that's another great thing about Lucha Underground for AAA fans, is that AAA is so multi-man match and very few for the singles, very few singles matches unless you're a top guy. With Lucha Underground, we've got to see more Aerostar and Drago matches and Pentagon singles matches than we've got to see in years of AAA, just because the TV is differently formatted. So it's been nice to see people given different opportunities in different places.
So before we get on out of here, we gotta let's do maybe a quick mention about some of the other characters and then focus in on one man to finish, El Jefe. So we'll save him for the end. But just to mention, we talked briefly, Mil Muertes, he's had the feud with Phoenix, which included probably the best match of the whole run of Lucha Underground so far, the amazing Grave Consequences casket match. Who would have thought that casket match in 2015 could be as good as this was? But that match is just incredible. Mil Muertes has done a very good job in his role. I think Katrina, who's been closely linked to him throughout the show, she's done a really good job. She was always a really good performer in WWE, just on shows that not many people watched. I suppose I'll run through a few people, and then you can give any thoughts you have on them, Cubs. That's probably the easiest way to do it. Big Rick, a guy firmly on the sort of Chavo list of people who you see involved in this, and you're like, oh, God, what did they have to offer? Why are they being included in this? And he's done a great job in his role, and they've presented him perfectly. The crew with Big Rick at the start and then branching off to do their own thing have been a real revelation for me. And they're another group who I was expecting to really just be jobbers, really, for Big Rick. And then once they branched off, they've really given these guys a chance to showcase themselves. And they've had a couple of really great trios matches, really, really good ones. There was one a few months back against... I can't remember exactly who they're against, but I know Superfly was on the team, and it was
Superfly, Aerostar,
Angelico.
It was three mask guys. It's the three Air Force guys versus the crew. So
yeah, that was fantastic. Then you've got Sexy Star. I think Sexy Star has a great role in the show as just the. And I guess it's funny because I guess she's a heel in Mexico, but she just plays the pure heart of gold, baby face, full of fire, valiant, underdog, but will fight any fight and believes in her cause. And just you can really get behind her as a baby face. I think she's fantastic. And they haven't done a ton with Masquerita Dorada and Pimpinella. Estrelita? Is that it? Pimpinella?
Escarlata,
sorry. So they haven't done a ton with those two, but I think they're more there just for to kind of be an extra little flavor when you need them. Yeah, I don't think I've missed anyone, but I probably have. So any thoughts on any of those people, Cubs, or anyone I might have missed?
I was happy for Mil Muertes because he's been a guy who's had really good matches in Puerto Rico, but no one really talks about Puerto Rico. He's had matches good in AAA, but AAA doesn't get much talk to either outside of its little spare. And he's looked a little bit run down the last couple of years. And his only big run in the U.S. was for the TNA stuff, but no one remembers because it wasn't any good. So coming into Lucha Underground and making such a big impression with the character, with the ugly pants, and with the casket match was just insanity. I'm glad for him that he got to have that moment, because he's a guy who obviously likes to have those big epic matches, and he got to have one on a huge stage. I really like Sexy Star in the vignettes and the promos. I think she's done really well getting her character across and just looking strong all the time and making it easy to believe into her character when she's talking to Dario. Her and Dario have a great interactions the times they've run into each other. I've liked those. And then guys who've just shown up, like Willie Mack, who in just two appearances has looked outstanding and looked like no one else but looked like a big star. I think he's made an impression in just a short amount of time.
So you mentioned Dario there. You see those spoilers at the start and you see heel authority figure, heel owner, and you cringe because it's just so passe, so cliche, so done. No one needs to see it anymore. Everyone's sick of the gimmick. And like, oh, here you're trying to be different to WWE and then you do this. It's just, everyone rolled their eyes at the same time when they saw that. And then people, I think within one episode, saw El Jefe, Dario Cueto, and they were just like, oh, this guy is actually, he's not so bad. And then it was a few more episodes and you start to get a feel for the character a bit more and get a feel for the fact that he's not necessarily the cliches of the heel authority figure of, oh, going to put the baby face in a handicap match, this and that, and always going to stack the odds and be pro the heels against the baby faces. It's not so much that. It's more he's just kind of a sick guy and he wants to see violence and he wants everyone really kind of to suffer and be put at high risk and high stakes in his playground. And he's not stacking the odds against people. He's just kind of creating situations where people are in uncomfortable situations and trying to get the most enjoyment for himself. Because again, it's his playground almost. It's his temple. And that's been my reading of the character and just the way he plays it in terms of his real just skeezy attitude when he's talking to people and creeping around up behind people in the temple and this and that. And I love whenever they go into his office and they always shoot the little bull on his table. It's just so fantastic. And he's kind of, whenever anyone kind of fires back at him, he's always quick to play the sniveling kind of coward, but he'll give them whatever they want, but he'll try to keep his cool. And yeah, just the whole package is phenomenal. I love the guy. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I love those scenes in The Office so much. I want the season finale just to be like performance reviews with everyone on the roster. Just him interacting with every single person for about a minute would just be so great. But yeah, he's got the thumbnail of him being this owner who's doing mean stuff just did not sound promising, but he's not good or evil. He's just chaotic. He's chaotic and he's pro-violence and he's possibly a little bit insane and it's just a great mix. He's possibly a bit on drugs and it also adds to it. It's his the actor delivery and the personality and the little quirks he adds to the character make him feel like a three-dimensional character. And I know sometimes we talk about certain people being good actors on wrestling shows, but seeing a real professional actor who shows up on a wrestling show makes so much. You can see the big gap and the big difference. He's made so many scenes where he's doing this stuff and the wrestler's standing there and he's just walking around the wrestler and it feels like it's a big deal and you're not noticing that the wrestler's not actually doing anything. Like the Aerostar and the Drago vignettes from last week where all Aerostar does in that is he looks at the stars and he adjusts his wrist pads a little bit. But it seems like this is an epic moment that's going on because Drago's on the roof. Because Aerostar's on the roof and Dario's behind him saying stuff. And the same thing with Drago in the bathroom. Drago doesn't really get to say anything, but it seems like something big is going down because Dario just has that way of making it seem
like
a big deal.
And I love that Dario is like, when we talked before, months ago, in this same very bathroom. I love that.
Dario said some good scenes in the bathroom between that and the time Mundo tried to beat him up. While he was zipping up his pants. There were some big moments for Dario.
One of it is his meetings with Conan. You gotta love the dynamic with those two, where you don't quite know if they like each other, don't like each other, are in sync with each other, but they were kind of working together, but I know what's going on there, but I like the dynamic.
It always feels like they're working together, but they're also figuring out which ways that they can backstab each other and get the other out of the way. You can tell there's like things going on multiple levels at the same time. They're friends, but they're enemies, but they also respect each other's evilness. It's just, there's a lot of layers in everything Dario does that it just makes everything feel like it's a richer experience.
It's super fascinating. And I'm looking forward to seeing where everything goes. As I mentioned, I got a few things spoiled for me there recently by Dave. Hey, you know what? It's still my enjoyment my excitement has been hampered at all. And in some ways, it's kind of just made me even more excited because I know there's some cool things on the horizon. And I kind of am curious to see how they get to all those points. So,
I will say, because the last episode I was at is the one airing next week. And even if you've read or heard what Dave said or otherwise found out about how this tournament turns out, seeing it and hearing about it are two different things. It was
awesome.
It was an amazing episode to see live, and I was glad I got to see that. And I think that's the thing with a lot of these spoilers is that it's even with the wins early on when I found out, finding out about what happened and seeing it happen, and then seeing all the vignettes and all the Dario stuff where you don't get to see that in a live crowd, it's a much better. You get a lot out of it even if you already know what's going on.
Just a quick mention as well. There's obviously the commentators have been a big talking point, Matt Stryker and Vampiro on the English side, and Hugo Savinovic and Vampiro on the Spanish side. And I'm lucky enough to see the Spanish side of things. I'm not the biggest Stryker fan in the world, although the bits I have seen when I've gone back and watched some of the matches they've put up in full on YouTube and stuff, I haven't found Stryker like appallingly bad, but I definitely am into itching to move over to the English version anytime soon. I love the Spanish version, and I'll watch all the backstage segments and stuff in English. I get the balance. But I think if people could have their wish, it would be like the perfect product if it was just maybe a different commentary deal going on there. But hey. It can't. Life's not perfect, so it's not going to be.
I was also very not high about this, and I told people who may be in charge that I was not really high on this particular team, and they told me that to trust in this team and they would get better, and I think they have got better over the course of these episodes. Stryker still does some annoying things, like when he did 15 different puns for Killshot when he debuted, that just kind of made me want to hit my head, but Stryker and Vampiro and Hugo on the Spanish feed bring lots and lots of energy to your show. I think that's kind of announcing you need.
Hugo's phenomenal. That's the other reason I don't want. Like, I don't speak a lick of Spanish, but this guy, like, everything comes true to me with this guy. He is amazing. I think he is. Oh, what a great commentator Hugo Savinovic is. Phenomenal.
You don't need to know Spanish when he yells "brutal" like three times after someone's done something crazy.
My favorite is "wow, wow, wow." I love that.
It doesn't feel like they're faking enthusiasm either. You can tell that he and Vampiro, even though they're obviously watching a TV of what happened like 2 hours earlier, whenever it was taped, they're still just that excited watching these matches.
And you got the ring announcer as well. I forget her name. She's really good.
Melissa Santos. Really good. She's very good. There. And they've given her a little character beats even before the Pentagon stuff, where she didn't say Mr. Cisco and got called on it, and then kind of sarcastically did it the next time. So I wonder if maybe she gets a bigger role down the line, because they obviously trust her to do little things.
Yeah, she's excellent. All the refs do a good job. It's just all around everyone firing on all cylinders in this production.
The one big name we forgot to talk about would be Alberto El Patron, who really hasn't got to do much outside of his AAA, doing the AAA redone feud with Tejano Jr. But that first show he came in was so awesome.
Yeah, he had the great promo. Really, all the matches with Tejano were good, but the Bull Road match in particular I thought was very good brawl. He's had some nice little interesting backstage segments with both Prince Puma and with Johnny Mundo. I forgot to mention him just because he has been kind of pushed to the background a little bit in the last couple of weeks, and it doesn't feel like wherever they were kind of building towards with him, it doesn't feel like we're I don't know, but he was effective for when he was used, and I haven't really been a huge fan of his stuff outside of WWE since he left, aside from what he's done in Lucha Underground, so I'm happy that he's doing well there. So I saw a match he had in Japan, and some of his Ring of Honor things, just wasn't really a big fan of. Although his match with ACH was pretty good, I'll say that.
Looking forward to see once he starts mixing in with some other guys besides Tejano, see how that goes. I think the problem was that he had that big feud and then he missed this block of tapings, so they filmed that little Mundo bit to keep him in people's mind. But once he starts showing up again, I think in 2 weeks, and starts going against other people, and it hopefully makes good on his promise to go against Prince Puma and go for the title, I think that'll be some interesting matches.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, no, that'll be cool to see. So, yeah, a huge positive in my pro wrestling world right now is Lucha Underground. Obviously, it's uncertain. There's been different rumors about how they'll move forward, if they'll move forward, how they're doing in terms of as a business. And obviously, that is the goal at the end of the day, is to be a successful business. And there's been some question marks raised over that. But like I said at the outset, I'm not going to worry about that. I'm just going to cross my fingers, hope this is a long-term thing, and while we have it, I'm just going to enjoy the heck out of it, because if it does go away in a year from now, 6 months from now, whatever, I'll want to have enjoyed it to its fullest while I have it, and it's something that is giving us plenty of opportunities to do just that at the moment. So, Cubs, yeah. I want to thank you so much. So if you have any closing thoughts, fire on.
I hope so too. I don't know about you, Alan, but I feel like even if it doesn't go to the second season, I think this is going to be it's going to be a block of episodes that people are going to want to watch back in years to come. And I think it's also going to be something that people are going to borrow elements from and borrow storyline, borrow production elements and storyline elements, and maybe even borrow some of the wrestlers if they don't get brought back for a second season, just because I think it's made such a big impression on people. I think it'll be influential going forward. One of the things I liked that we haven't mentioned is that Lucha Underground has some of those episodes has that 30-second teaser at the end that feels like stolen from the Marvel movies, where there's a little tease of something coming up for next episode, some big cliffhanger or just some random appearance. I'm kind of hoping that by the end of this podcast, we would have this. I could do this 30-second teaser where I knew if it was the second season, but I think that's just going to have to remain a mystery for a little bit longer.
Yeah. So, are they in that aforementioned spoiler that Dave did for me on the show? He mentioned something about there being like an extra big show that they're doing, that they're building towards. Is that something that's been announced? That's kind of, aside from hearing him just briefly mention that, which I might have misheard, it's not something I had heard.
They're going to do, so the season, they're taping 39 episodes, so they'll go all the way to August 5th. The July 29th and the August 5th episodes will be called Ultima Lucha Final Battle, obviously. And then that 729 episode will be the first part, and then the August 5th episode, which is the last of their scheduled run from the beginning, will be a 2-hour special. So it's going to be like a pay-per-view on TV, basically. They're going to do, everyone has a big match. There's a big match they build to many weeks that will take place, that kind of thing.
And is that going to be taped a good bit before when it happens, or is that going to be taped very close to when it airs?
It's going to be taped in about 90 minutes from when we're doing this podcast.
Whoa, holy shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So it's good we do it now, so then I don't have that in my mind for the rest of the day. But I'm trying to keep that off the podcast.
Awesome. Well, Cubs, again, thank you so much. This has been a blast. It's been exactly what I envisioned and wanted this show to be. Just love and appreciation for somebody that deserves love and appreciation. And if you have any plugs or anything you want to let the people know about, please, by all means, now is the time.
I have so much stuff. I have. If you like Lucha Underground, I do reviews, drifts, thoughts on Lucha Underground every Wednesday night. Usually gets up about an hour or so after the show airs. I also cover everything else in Lucha Libre. My blog is luchablog.com. I have daily news updates that go up around noon that have every result, every link you can think of. I do recaps of every CML and AAA show I can get my hands on, and then maybe other stuff when I have time. My Twitter is LuchaBlog. I tweet there way too often sometimes and not enough other times. And then I also pay for the Lucha Wiki, which is a free-for-all encyclopedia for Lucha Libre at luchawiki.org that has tons of bios.
A really good resource.
That other better people than me have done the bios, but they're there for everyone to read. We have tons of profiles and information about different people. And then occasionally I pop up on Voices of Wrestling when I have an idea. And I think I'm working on a couple ideas for my site for projects. So you might see some stuff there soon.
Awesome. And you do one hell of a job, buddy. And someone like me who's kind of not super into Lucha, and whenever I try and get into stuff and I try and, like, for instance, there's been this recent Kamitachi
Dragon Lee
feud, which I just saw a few things from and I really loved, and I tried to watch more of it and I tried to figure out what was going on, and just like your site and everything you do is such an invaluable resource in helping someone like me who's not super in tune with the stuff figure out what's going on and who's doing what, and it's a big help.
I should plug that too. I have a YouTube channel that has like every Lucha Libre match that I can find. That's like maybe 8 yes. hours every week. It's YouTube/the user/the Cubs fan. There's some other ones that have older stuff, but that's the one. Every Tuesday morning, when I'm on schedule, you'll find 20 some new videos from both major promotions and any indie Lucha Libre you can find on some obscure web feed. So, if you want to find everything, it's there. Sometimes it's a little difficult to find the best stuff, but I try to go through it and post reviews of what I think is the stuff to go back and see. So we've got you covered all different ways.
Well, thank you again, Cubs. Thank you, everyone, for listening. It's been really fun talking about Lucha Underground, and we'll probably talk a little. We should maybe do another one of these, maybe just before the big special. I think that would work nicely. A couple of months down the road, check in on everything that's happened in between now and then on the TV. I really hope that not too much comes out about this Ultima Lucha. And that people can, I'm sure it'll be, for anyone who wants to avoid spoilers, you'd have to find yourself in a pretty unfortunate predicament carrying boxes and holding open doors while your headphones are in to really fall victim to it. Because in general, they're pretty much kept out of sight. So I think people are quite respectful of it. And it's
don't
good,
go to Wikipedia. I should warn this. A couple of people have been spoiled on the Trios tournament, especially by going to Wikipedia and looking for stuff. Do not go, they will put up stuff. Don't go to Wikipedia.
Okay. Good.
That's your PSA.
Pro tip there. everyone, thank you for listening. We'll be back whenever we'll be back. I don't have a plan, but I do know what the next show is going to be. So until then, everyone, bye. Yeah.
John.